Welcome back to the Multi-Orgasmic Millionaire Podcast. I have two things to share with you right now. Number one is that the Reignite the Passion Summit is going live Friday, April 26th and Saturday, April 27th of 2024. If you have not already registered, I want you to go down to the link in the show notes to register, because in this summit, we have 22 experts in the fields of love, sex, relationships, dating, and all of our experts are sharing with you not only their expertise and their knowledge and their tools and techniques to help you reignite passion for yourself, but they're also going to share their stories, which I think is so valuable in this day and age where you go to the therapist and you go to the counselor and you actually don't know anything about them or whether or not they actually have a healthy long-term relationship. So you're going to hear from the experts themselves how they have maintained or reignited things after periods of droughts or periods where things just weren't so good in their relationship. So I want you to go catch us at the summit. So the link is in the show notes. It's totally free to attend. It's virtual. You don't have to go anywhere. Yes, you're going to have replays available through May 2nd. So you have lots of time to watch replays. None of it you have to pay for, which is amazing. So go join us at the summit. I'm so excited to share speakers like Dr. Alexandra Stockwell with you, because she is one of our speakers and she's also the guest on today's show. So in this episode, we're going to dive into this conversation with Dr. Alexandra Stockwell, where she's going to share with you some of the secrets to enhancing intimacy and passion in relationships. So here's what you're going to get out of it today, all right? You're going to hear from Dr. Alexandra herself, how she went from being a physician to the intimacy doctor, and how her work centers around deepening connection and intimacy. You're going to learn about some of the myths of mismatched libidos and learn why emotional intimacy is crucial for sustaining desire in long-term relationships. We're also going to explore the role of communication, authenticity, and emotional connection in igniting and maintaining passion over the long haul. And she's going to share with you her insights into postmenopausal sex, because personally, I haven't been through that yet. And I think this is so valuable for many of my clients, because most of my clients tend to be older these days. I'm not sure why, but many of them are postmenopausal. So you're really going to appreciate her perspective on this and how intimacy and pleasure can evolve and actually peak during your postmenopausal years. And she's also going to delve into the subtle nuances of sexual experiences, and so you can really understand the importance of being fully present and authentic with your partner and with yourself. So I'm so excited to share this episode with you today. I hope you enjoy. And if you get something out of this, please send us a 5-star rating. And if you feel really called to write a review on whatever podcast app you are listening into this channel right now, just give us a 5-star rating and share with us what you got out of the episode. What did you love? What might you take away from what you learned here today? All right, we'll see y'all soon. Bye. Welcome to the Multi-Orgasmic Millionaire Podcast, where sexual liberation meets financial empowerment. Join me, Tilly Storm, top 20 sex coach worldwide, on my own journey to becoming a multi-orgasmic millionaire through the mystical art of sex magic, financial savvy, and guidance from my very own mystical yoni oracle. I'm going to reveal how I'm turning orgasms into cold, hard cash. Get ready to dive deep and discover the secrets to living a life of abundance on your own multi-orgasmic terms. I've got a guest for you today, which rarely happens on this podcast, but I'm bringing her on because she's so amazing, so awesome, and so aligned. Her name is Dr. Alexandra Stockwell. Hey, Dr. Alexandra, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm honored to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to hear about your work that you do in the world and really share about your relationship and how you came into being the intimacy doctor in the first place, because your work is very aligned to what I do, but you're focusing way more on relationship stuff, which is very interesting to me. So I'd love to hear about your pivot from being a doctor yourself to being the intimacy doctor.
Okay, let's see. As a physician, and long before I began medical school, I really learned to do what I was supposed to do, to have clear goals. I have a kind of a rebellious spirit. I always have, but I was very clear on what my goals were and what I needed to do to get there. Anything that I didn't was a detour that was fun, that wasn't going to get in the way of my goals, I certainly pursued it. In fact, I've been married for 28 years. And before I went on my first date with my husband, I knew that he was going to be the one probably. Like, I wasn't super, I didn't sign a, make a vow or anything, but I just had this feeling inside. And so I postponed our first date because there was somebody else that I wanted to have a little fun with. And I knew that if I went on the first date with my husband, not my husband then, I probably wouldn't get to have the fun I was going to have. So I had the fun, postponed the first date. And anyway, so we've been together ever since. However, throughout our relationship in the early years, we were both medical students. We had kids young, we were in training and just really focused on creating the life we intended, always assuming, not that we ever discussed it, but he assumed it without saying it. And I definitely assumed it without saying it, that once we had more time together, we weren't working nights and weekends, that then we'd have these amazing opportunities to explore one another's bodies and have the kind of erotic communion that the poets write about. We loved one another so much and really were mutually supportive. We didn't have hardly any conflict at all. We were set up to have this wonderful, luscious sex life. However, when we had more time, done with training, didn't have babies in diapers, there wasn't really that much that changed. We got more sleep. So, you know, we had a little more energy for life, but there wasn't anything that really changed in terms of the erotic connection, the intimacy between us. And at first, I was a little in denial. Then I was confused. And then I decided to do something about it. And so the abbreviated version of that is that I eventually, after finding the courage to express to him that I think we could enhance this part of our life to put it on a par with other parts of our lives that were good, that I did this very in-depth training that doubled as a coach training. It was for lay people and a coach training. And at the time, I really didn't know what a coach was. That was just an irrelevancy for me. I wanted to have more sexual pleasure myself and be able to up-level our bedroom, become a high-performing bedroom rather than a low-performing bedroom in an otherwise high-performing marriage. So I did this training, and because educational models interest me, I thought, let me just go to the teaching lab. I was so curious how you teach someone to teach in an arena which is so much more intuitive and embodied compared to any of the academic learning I had done. Mm-hmm. And when I was at the teaching lab, I just thought, oh, I have come home. I want to become masterful in this arena for my own marriage, to model that for our four children and really change the relational trajectory of the generations in my husband's family and mine. And I also want to help other people do this as well, because I came to understand that having a fantastic relationship is a learnable skill and really the only reason that we were not having extraordinary sex as we now are after 28 years of marriage, but we weren't after 2, 6, and 8 years of marriage, is because we just didn't have the education.
Yeah. Oh, man. If I could have a bullhorn and tell everyone that sex and relationships is a learned skill, I would just scream at it from the mountaintop. So thank you for sharing that.
Yes. And I would, when you took a break, I'd pick up and do it too. I think really, as you said earlier, our stories, our trainings are really different from one another, but this theme, this alignment that we have is so related to sex, pleasure, communication, not by following scripts. It's a learnable skill in the sense that we can teach people how to fish, not that we give them a fish, which is what I think of in terms of following a user's manual, touch here, touch there, say, when you do this, I feel this. Like, all of that is good for role play and for learning, but not for really authentic connection and the gratification that comes from it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. We're going to talk about the myth of mismatched libido. This is the hot topic for me. I think I just get tired of having the same conversation over and over. So I'm hoping that your perspective will shed some light or maybe give that one nugget of wisdom that people need to hear in order to understand that it is a myth. So first, before we dive in, who's the higher desire partner in your relationship?
That is such an interesting question. So there was a long time when my husband definitely felt that he was the higher desire partner. And I remember when he said it, I was shocked and offended. Because first of all, being the low desire partner is the much more shameful situation. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah.
But I realized that it took me a while to unpack it. I don't identify as a low desire partner. And I think now, I don't know, like we both have a lot of desire. But back in the day, he identified as a high desire partner. I did not identify as a low desire partner because I wanted something. I definitely had desire for something. It just wasn't really available. And the way that he initiated didn't feel like an invitation I wanted to accept. And so I feel like my behaviors were low desire behaviors, but how I was really feeling inside my body did not feel low desire. It just felt frustrating.
Yeah. Okay. So he wasn't meeting you in the ways that really turned you on is what I'm hearing. Yeah.
Exactly. Having had basically 100% of his education from porn. And then as a medical student and physician, there's like more clinical attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
And he actually is interesting. He taught self-defense after graduating from college before going to medical school and facilitated incredible healing for many women who'd been raped or in other kinds of scary situations and some who hadn't, and really guided them to find strength and presence and pleasure in their bodies again through a self-defense class. It was an experiential learning, not so much talking. But the point is that he has an impeccable, clean energy in terms of not bringing sexual energy where it's not supposed to be. But I found that I wanted more of it where in my mind it was supposed to be. But it's like he was so careful with the transmission of his sexual. We had a lot of different things to work through. Let me just put it like that. Okay. So if I just was going to answer quickly, I would say I was a low desire partner, but I just feel like that's actually a false answer too.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I like that you point that out, that maybe it's not that you don't have the desire that your partner thinks that you should be having, which is, but more about the approach. And for men, they get that conditioning that I work with a men's dating coach, and I do sexuality sessions with her men. Tell you how many of them are just absolutely terrified to make a move on a woman. Honestly, that's what we're working on in almost all of our sessions, is like, how do I advance things to sex without being a creep or coming off as a terrible person who just wants to have sex with a woman? So it's very interesting to see how careful men are these days and how much it actually holds them back from initiating sex, from feeling that it's safe to. I had one guy in particular who was, he was one of the few, right? One of the ones where over 6 foot tall, he makes way over six figures. So he's got the sixes going for him. And he was so afraid that some woman would say something, like he would do something inappropriate sexually, and he would lose his career, that somehow he'd lose his job because he had a friend that happened to. So it's just so interesting to see all that conditioning. Okay, so that was a tangent.
Actually, I'll just add one more thing, though, because I think I'm guessing there are many women listening who, like, you want more primal energy from your man. Like, you want to feel he is there and he has you. And he, whether he pushes you up against the wall or he doesn't even touch you, but he's so in control as he breathes near your neck. Like, we want that kind of energy available. And the thing that I will say with my husband, who is a martial arts black belt, he taught self-defense, he's a very fit, strong man. And I wanted to feel his more intense emotions, not, yes, during sex, but also not during sex. Like, at a certain point, he had just never gotten angry with me ever. And for someone who's in a toxic relationship, you're like, hallelujah. But for me, it's that I felt like there was this like raw, super sexy magnetic energy, and I wasn't allowed to feel it. I felt like he was frugal in the wrong department. And so in saying, just get angry with me, it's okay. Like, we'll deal with it. But if you're feeling it, you don't need to bury it so many layers down. And at one point, it was a really vulnerable thing. He said to me, I'm afraid that if I let it out, I'm going to kill you. And he said it that gently and happily. We'd been married long enough, and I understood in a way that I certainly didn't before, but I had come to understand men so much more deeply that I knew not to laugh. Because there was no part of me that thought this gentle man would ever kill. He's never done anything even a little bit in that direction. I'd like him in those days. I just yearned for him to pound me in bed. And like when he said this soft, right? I'm afraid if I let it out, I'm going to kill you. A part of me just thought, this is pathetic. This is ridiculous. He's afraid he's going to kill me. That's why I can't feel his sexual prowess. But I knew better. And I knew he really meant it. Oh. And that was actually our starting point, that he was withholding so much of him that I yearned for because of his love for me and not wanting to destroy it. So we can go back from the detour, but I feel like this is all the content that's familiar to so many and not really ever spoken about. Because even the conversation I'm recounting required a lot of self-awareness on his part and mine. That's, we had to get to the point where we could even have that exchange.
Yep. Yep. When I work with a man extensively in my men's program, one of the practices that I have them do is actually get in touch with their ability to kill and their primal fuck response. Because there is in his life no place in society, no place in his marriage, usually, to share the depth of that part of him. So when he can see it, feel it himself, honor that within him in the privacy of his own home with a closed door and get in touch with that part of him, it helps to actually integrate that part back. So he sees that he does have control over those responses where he's not powerless to them, even though they can feel overwhelming. So it's a huge topic around men. But I love that that you bring up that's partly what you were wanting to receive from him and why maybe you were perceived as the lower desire partner because of that dynamic that you had. And I think that's very common for a lot of relationships. So I'm very glad that you brought that up. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I think it really gets to what I consider the heart of the myth of libido mismatch. And that is that, okay, let me just say, because I don't practice clinical medicine anymore, but I am a physician. So I just have to say that there are actual situations that diminish desire that are anatomical and physiological. And actually, one of the things that happens is when there's a new drug, then often there's a lot of attention given to the diagnoses that would be treated with that drug. So it used to be that, yeah, there was like low desire and maybe a few people who research sex. There are not that many people who research sex, especially in the US where the funding is low. But anyway, there's some people would have more nuanced understanding. But basically, doctors know some people have desire, some people now there's hypoactive sexual desire. There are all these different diagnoses, but the context for these diagnoses coming into women's magazines, which happened for a number of them in the last, I forget exactly, like about 4 years. It's because there are medications that treat that. So then people need to be familiar with the diagnosis. And the fact is that some of the time there are real things. There are clitoral adhesions and there just are different medical things that do influence someone's interest in having sexual experiences. However, the vast majority of the times, it's actually not fundamentally anatomical or physiological, that why would a woman, and particularly her body, desire more of an experience that isn't nourishing, gratifying, and expansive? And there are some couples where when the woman is a low desire partner that they've had really great sex and then her desire tapers off. And then there are some women who've just never ever experience the kind of sex that they would want more of and don't even have a sense of what they're missing. They just think, well, I'm not that into it. And so when talking to male partners of low desire female partners, there is nothing wrong with her. Don't even, like, going down that path is just really just prolongs the issue. The thing for you to do if you're a man is to learn how you can contribute to co-creating the kinds of experiences that she would want more and more of. And if you are a woman, the exact same thing applies. It's just that you can start having those experiences on your own. And for anyone who questions how much of a myth libido mismatch is, just think of all of your friends who were in sexless marriages or minimal sex marriages, and they get divorced, and then they have a new partner, and they are squirting on a regular basis and happy to be like bunnies and just discovering all this incredible territory. It's the same woman in the same body. It's not how her body functions that has changed. It's what was on the menu that has changed.
Yeah, context. Yeah. Context is so important. And I think you're totally right. I concur. Okay. So you talked about how it's more about the approach in your work with couples when the sex isn't really happening. I know that you're working more around communication and relationship struggles. But when we were talking one time before, you mentioned that usually when you're focusing on the relationship things, the sex piece just works itself out without having to even touch on the subject. And I hear that from a lot of relationship coaches. Laura Doyle talks about it in her book all the time, The Empowered Wife, and she has the Empowered Wife podcast, I think. But yeah, so like several coaches that have a lot of people in their field, I hear the same thing from. So tell me about that experience for you. Why do you think that is, that when you're working with the relationship, the sex changes?
Yeah, I love how you asked that. So one of the things that I make a point of distinguishing is that it's different early in dating and even in a one-night stand, where definitely not always, but you can have a really fantastic time with someone on a one-night stand without knowing their name. That's certainly possible. My focus is with couples who are committed, who've been together for some number of years and want to continue to be together for a long time, that in that context, emotional intimacy is a prerequisite for sexual intimacy and erotic connection. It's not a prerequisite for having sex, but it's a prerequisite for really enjoying sex and having really fulfilling experiences. And I think the main reason, it's really interesting because when I interviewed you on my podcast, and I don't even remember right now what the question was, but your answer was wholeness. And wholeness is so key. And I'm saying that because, yes, we have the skills to compartmentalize in our lives, but sex is like the ultimate lie detector, if you will. Because when we, in our day-to-day lives with a partner that we have a life with, we're living together, same home, same family, etc., when we have that experience, and there's disconnection in the day-to-day interactions, we can't compartmentalize that and then show up in the bedroom just ready to be really connected and let our bodies blend with one another in a kind of uncensored, creative, loving way, when outside of the bedroom, we've been more or less shut down from one another. And so the way that I think about it is that if you learn to be present with one another and just open up close connection, I call it emotional intimacy, but I really just mean being able to be authentic and feel seen and heard, curious, that when you have those flavors in your day-to-day interactions, then you get to have those flavors in the context of sex and bodily exploration as well. And it's just super hard when you feel like your spouse just isn't interested in what you have to say. It's hard to be open and responsive to what's happening in one another's bodies. But if you learn to have attention and receptivity and authenticity with one another when talking about who's going to pick the kids up from school and where you want to go on vacation. And I don't mean that it has to all be like some sacred tantra conversation when you're discussing logistics. No, you have the energy of logistics for logistics, and you have the energy of brainstorming vacation destinations. Like, you get to be lots of different things. But if you don't have that fundamental sense of caring and interest and authenticity, it just tanks desire.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so while I have you on, I have a question about postmenopause.
Okay.
Because you were sharing before, like, it comes out different when it comes from a gray-haired woman, and I think you're right. So I have not crossed that bridge. I don't think I'm anywhere close to crossing that portal, but I would love to hear it from you. What is that transition like in terms of desire, intimacy? What are the changes that you witnessed in yourself or your relationship? How do you support couples around that transition? Anything you want to share around postmenopausal sex?
Okay. I think the most important thing to understand, like the bottom line takeaway that I would love for every woman and every partner who loves a woman to really have in mind in approaching going through perimenopause, menopause, and beyond, is that in our society, in Western culture, we have this very weird, often unconscious assumption that when it comes to our career, we will grow and evolve with each decade. That when it comes to our finances, like, we expect our net worth to be higher at 60 than it was at 40 and higher at 40 than it was at 20. That the whole like educational model going from kindergarten to 12th grade, that in so many different areas of our lives, parenting, we expect to start by learning basic addition and subtraction. And if we're ambitious and motivated, we get to calculus and maybe we stop at algebra or geometry. But the point is that we expect an evolutionary trajectory. But some way, somewhere, and I don't actually care so much why, I care that it not, that people just change this. We have this idea that sex is different. We are out of touch with the evolutionary trajectory in our sex lives and in how our bodies and souls express our sexual nature. And so I think a lot of people think that the sex that they were having at 25 or 30 is the ultimate. Mm-hmm. And that's what they want to have. So if you're not having sex, let's say you're 50 and you're not having sex the way you were at 25, that it's lesser. This is most people's experience. And it is just fundamentally flawed, because if you orient to your genitals, your heart, your soul, and certainly your sex life as something that has an evolutionary trajectory, then it's like, oh, okay, so maybe that doesn't feel as good as it used to, or that doesn't really have my whole body surrender, but what will? And what are the new sensations that are available now? And I feel like it's less about more acrobatics and new positions and much more about refined attention. So yes, the erotic blueprints are a really helpful guide, and so are other things. But I feel like mostly, not the erotic blueprints, but a lot of other techniques that we can learn in sex, like, they're really great for getting out of a rut. But in terms of sustaining the spark and just continuing to nurture it through the decades, the key is continuing to learn and explore. And sometimes you explore and it is just a fail, and then you have to just laugh and try again the next time. But other times you really discover the most amazing things. And when the caring and the connection and the communication is there, I would say one of the important things with post-perimenopausal sex is there's probably more talking during the sex than before. It's, oh, a little slower, please.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, more of that. There's just, ideally, every woman gets to the point where she actually deserves to enjoy sexual experiences. And so then that necessarily requires communication. I feel like I've said like a whole bunch of things, but the main thing is that half of women over 50 are no longer having sex anymore. And yet we know very clearly from the research that women's sexuality doesn't peak until we're in our 60s and 70s. So those who continue to have sex have very extraordinary experiences, and the others just don't know and give up. And I just have to talk about this. On my podcast, the Intimate Marriage Podcast, I interviewed this couple that had been married for 51 years, and she talks about her orgasms getting better and better. And I have other stories too. It's just I refer to that one because anyone can listen to it because it's on my podcast.
Yeah. Oh my God. I so love that you shared that last part about the orgasms getting better with age, because that's when, obviously, I've not gone through menopause yet, but I have a lot of clients that have. And one of their biggest questions is, we want to get back to where it was. And I'm like, okay, well, it's never going to be what it was. First of all, that's called the desire imperative. Emily Nagoski talks about it a lot in her newest book, Come Together. So if you have that thinking that sex when you're 25 is the ultimate sex and that it should just be spontaneous all the time, that's bullshit. Okay. That's not how it works in long-term relationships. And you can learn all about that in that book. But one thing that I really like to point out is that there's two different types of orgasmic experiences. There's friction-based orgasms and then there's non-friction-based orgasms. And when women stop having sex in their 50s, that's because they think that's all there is and they just don't know what they don't know. But there's, as you age, there becomes more of an importance on exploring new things and learning about new things, having different types of experiences, opening up your energetic capability to have energy and full body orgasms, which is totally possible, especially if you're super dry or you're having vaginal atrophy that makes it painful, or intercourse isn't that great for you for whatever reason, right? So there is a whole separate type of pleasure experience, orgasmic experience to be had that most people just don't even understand or know about. So I love that you shared with your client because I'm like, I wonder what sort of thing she's experiencing orgasmically, because it's probably more along the lines of that full body energy awakening type experience. Yeah.
I didn't get into, like, she wasn't my client. I just interviewed them on the podcast. Okay. And so I don't know exactly like who's doing what, where, to whom. I don't know that. But I did ask her, what has it be that your orgasms are getting better and better? Because they said they've always had a healthy sex life. There are highs and lows, or more frequency, less frequency in any 51-year marriage. But what she said is allowing herself to experience more pleasure.
Yeah. Increasing your pleasure capacity. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that is one of the most essential things to postmenopausal sex, whatever, to maybe you do need more lube, maybe you need more pillows, but you get to set things up. The experience becomes more gourmet. That's really what I want to say. More intentional, more gourmet. You want to savor the appetizers, have a breather before you get to the main course. It just is a more gourmet experience. And I'll add one more thing, which is that I had a client who had been married for 5 years and then gotten divorced and then was with another man for 5 years. And things were good, but she was just so afraid. She said, Alexandra, I just love novelty, and all the novelty was gone. That's why we got divorced. She actually had a really great relationship with her ex. They were friends. It was just that things became boring because they became monotonous. And she's, things are good with my guy, but I'm just concerned that I'm going to be dissatisfied. We don't have enough variety. And so I was so grateful for the question because it gave me a chance to answer. I didn't realize people had this question until she asked us. No, with long lasting passion, variety, instead of being like another position from the Kama Sutra, it's that my husband and I will be doing something that we don't have people watching, but if they were, it would look like something we've done zillions of times before. But he'll make this micro adjustment while inside me. And we both have a quality of attention, so we're really present and experiencing it. And he'll make this micro adjustment. And then there'll be like, suddenly I'm in this whole landscape that I've never been in before, where it's like tapping a new reservoir, where it seemed like, yeah, it wasn't a desert. There wasn't a lot of water. And this, oh my gosh, there's all aquifer here. Sometimes literally. But it does. It just comes from a micro adjustment, which only can be made with that delicious result when both people are really present to their own bodies, to one another. And there's a kind of bliss in the familiarity with one another's bodies after 3 decades that, yes, with less attention and presence and connection to oneself, it leads to monotony. But with sex as part of our evolutionary trajectory and 2 people devoted to their own growth, that familiarity means you know all of the hidden pathways.
Yeah. 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 The familiarity versus novelty thing. The novelty, Jaya teaches, that's part of the passion trifecta. If you want passionate sex over the long haul, there's got to be novelty. Try new things together, obviously. But I think it doesn't mean so much as, yeah, try all of the positions. Yeah. I think Saida Desolet, are you familiar with her?
Yes, yeah.
Her partner and her, they have Suction Sex, I think is the name of their brand now. They really speak into those subtleties, those novelty subtleties. I think they just did an entire podcast episode where they talked about the subtlety of inserting a penis in a vagina. And I'm like, how can you spend an hour talking about that? Because it's not just put it in. Like, there's so much subtlety.
That is so interesting. I look forward to listening because, like, when you say that, one of the, like, I have a lot of thoughts that come to mind simultaneously, but one of them, which I always find super interesting, and actually my husband and I are not necessarily always coordinated, and so one of us has to not dominate a little bit, that when it comes to inserting the penis in the vagina, that it can be driven by the penis or it can be driven by like the whole body and then the penis participates too. That's one way that I would describe it. And I actually, it sometimes he wants it, just let the penis make this happen and we'll all catch up, like, you know, hanging on, like, I don't know, open convertible, moving quickly, like the penis is leading and we're going to catch up. And then there are other times where it's so luscious. There's no like dramatic difference from before to when it's starting to approach with sliding in there. Anyway, I think that's such a fascinating thing. But the reason that I'm giving this detail is that these are conversations that it's just not possible to have if you haven't had a partner long enough or you haven't had the quality and flavors of the sex reflect the longevity of the relationship, which I think is actually far more common, that the flavors of the sex don't reflect the depth and longevity of the relationship. And that really then gets back to the primary thing of learning to bring your whole self and be authentic. Your clothes are on and when your clothes are off.
Awesome. All right. I think that's a good place for us to end. So can you please share where people can connect with you and find you?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. AlexandraStockwell.com. That's my website. And you can really find everything. My book, Uncompromising Intimacy, the Intimate Marriage Podcast, all my social media links. And if you're interested in any of my online programs or private coaching, all of that is at AlexandraStockwell.com.
Awesome. All right, love. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.